Hello, Back Chatters. I'm Andrew Work.
And I'm Rainbow Learn.
On today's Back Chat, we're going to be talking about the new mainland travel permits, which can be applied for starting next week. Go get them. Non-ethnically Chinese permanent residents of Hong Kong and Macau, which includes me, will no longer need visas to visit the mainland, as Beijing announced an expansion of its travel permit arrangements.
Valid for 5 years, the travel card will grant holders the right to stay in the mainland for up to 90 days and give access to automated immigration clearance gates. However, those wishing to work or study in China will still need to seek separate approval.
The new arrangement was warmly welcomed by business chambers, which have long called on authorities across the border to facilitate entry for Hong Kong-based foreign nationals.
And after 9:45, we'll talk about regulations around pet ownership of hedgehogs, with one association announcing that they would stop offering adoption services. So tell us what you think of these developments. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, email us at backchat@rthk.hk, or you can call us on 233-88266.
All right. A measure that I think is going to be welcomed by a lot of people in Hong Kong, this ability to travel visa-free across the border. Where you got a couple of pros in the biz to talk about it today. Stephen Barnes, the co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Center and author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook, is joining us today. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, and a very good morning to you.
Hey, good to have you on the show. We're also joined by Professor Whitman Hung, who is the director of the Greater Bay Research Center of the China Silk Road Eye Valley Research Institute. Good morning, Whitman.
Good morning.
So I'm going to kick off with you, Whitman slash Professor Hung, as you prefer. I understand that you were one of the first people to call for this, to say, hey, let's give these guys a break. Let's make it, they're part of the great nation. Let's give them a chance to cross the border. Tell us about how the idea came about.
Yeah, I have many, non-ethnic Chinese friends in Hong Kong, and we always talk about it, that when we cross the border, I can use my, the travel permit and go through the automatic, entrances, and they have to queue up. And also, some of my British friends who have been in Hong Kong for 30 years, every time they still have to apply for a visa in the old days, it's like every 2 years or every 1 year. So I wrote this, I was a deputy to the National Congress in the last term. So I actually wrote a formal suggestion to the Congress that we should do that. We should, issue a traveling card. I call it a traveling card for, non-ethnic Chinese Hong Kong residents. At that time, this was, I first started talk about it in 2019 and then subsequently in 2021. At that time, the Ministry of Public Security, actually one guy from there called me up. He said, we received your suggestion. We understand where you're coming from, but we can't do it because by law in China, non-Chinese nationals need to come in with a passport and a visa. He said, you are a deputy to a Congress, so why don't you put a suggestion and change the law, which obviously I couldn't. But then subsequently, we talked about it a few more times. It's not just about crossing the border. It's also about, for example, traveling on a high-speed train. Chinese Hong Kong residents with the traveling car, we can actually go in directly with our traveling card in all the Chinese train stations. But the passport holders need to go and get a physical train ticket, queue up. So that really is an inconvenience. So I'm really glad that finally they now agree to issue this traveling card to the non-ethnic Chinese Hong Kong residents.
Yeah, that's the main issue that I've heard, is people who are traveling with other permanent residents of Hong Kong who just breeze through at the high-speed rail checkpoints. And meanwhile, the non-Chinese are like, all right, you go to the slow zone over there with your visa. Terrible. Stephen Barnes, you're on the Hong Kong Visa Center. This is a disaster. This is terrible. Isn't part of your business helping people to get visas and things? Now they're going to be like, no problem, Stephen. I'll call you in 5 years when I need another one. What's your take?
Well, look, it's all good news, right? I mean, these things are all about ease of access and ultimately control. there's no reason why, if you have been a Hong Kong permanent resident and you've committed yourself to Hong Kong through having acquired permanent residency, you shouldn't be able or afforded to have the ability to go into Mother China with the same sort of spirit in hand, if you will. In terms of it being a loss of revenue, firstly, Chinese visas has not been a very big part of our sort of revenue base all throughout, but I'm not really concerned about that.
Well, actually,
there is another instrument that one can use if you're a permanent resident to go into China. That's with the business travel card from APEC. And Hong Kong permanent residents of any nationality can apply for one of these cards. It's valid for 5 years. It gives you access to the APEC community.
We can talk about that later. I've got stories to tell about that card. But yes, we'll get to that later.
Well, that obviated the need for a Chinese visa, right? So right. From that perspective, like I haven't had a Chinese visa for donkey's years, to be honest. Mm. But no, look, anything that makes it easy to travel is all good as far as I'm concerned. And I'll certainly be in the queue for one of these fine instruments, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I understand about 275,000 people, is that right, Rainbow?
That's right, that are the targeted audience for this. So my question is this, I mean, that's the target audience and it would be applicable to 270,000 non-Chinese residents. So I can certainly see it enhances mobility for them to pop over the border. But so ultimately, I can see that it's good for businesses in China, but in what way is it good for Hong Kong?
It's a good question because, I mean, we've seen the headlines, boost for business in Hong Kong. I'm like, more people can leave easier on the weekend.
It makes it easy for you to go to Costco in Shenzhen, but, you know,
yeah.
But what about the impact on businesses in Hong Kong?
Whitman, you want to field that one first?
Well, first of all, unless you're in the retail and hospitality industry, which is still a private, most other industries we have linked with mainland China. You know, whether you're in trading, whether you're in manufacturing, whether you are in R&D, chances are, I travel across the border. I'm now in Shenzhen right now, by the way. And, and I just drive over this morning, early morning. So I came to Shenzhen almost like two or three times a week nowadays because of business reasons. And it's not that without the car, people won't travel. It's just that it's just not as convenient. But I think what is important is it will make Hong Kong, an even closer tie with the other part of the Greater Bay Area, and that will attract more people to come to Hong Kong. Mm. Most foreign people, they come to Hong Kong not just because of Hong Kong, but because of China, right? Yeah, the city is only 7.4 million people, 7.3 now, I think. And, without the mainland, I mean, a lot of business can't be done. So really, this is just making their life easy.
So you're saying because of closer ties to the Greater Bay Area, that will attract more foreigners to come to Hong Kong as a link to GBA. But the fact that this visa policy only covers non-Chinese permanent residence, that means this is only applicable to those who have stayed in Hong Kong for 7 years, right? So unless you're thinking long term, as a foreigner, I may not necessarily be thinking, oh, I'll come to Hong Kong, stay for 7 years, then get my visa.
This is just the first step, okay? I think this is the first step. When I made my suggestion, I was talking about Hong Kong residence, okay, not just permanent. So if you have a Hong Kong ID card, which means you already chose to domicile in Hong Kong. And those people, I think in the longer run, I mean, there's nothing stopping them from also easing to those people. I mean, in the past few years, obviously we know a lot of people immigrate outside of Hong Kong, but we're also seeing quite a few people from, North America coming into Hong Kong because of that. And these people, they actually may be ethnic Chinese, but they have American or Canadian passport, they were born in America, so for them to get changed into a real ethnic Chinese with talking service documents, it's difficult. So for them, it will make it also convenient. I mean, these people have been here already for 3-4 years, so I think it will be, very soon that they will get their permanent ID. Mm.
How sticky do you think they are going to be about the conditions of this? Because it's no study, no work, and no controlled activities like reporting on the press. I guess I think market research is considered a controlled activity. But I mean, you know, a lot of people get a tourist visa. If they've got to go up to Beijing and do a couple of meetings, maybe sometimes even meetings with government, they don't apply for a work visa, right? They just get a, you know, they just get a tourist visa, pack a suit, and they go up, do a couple of days of meetings and come back. Technically, they're doing work, but I mean, nobody really cares. With this kind of visa, how sticky do you think it's going to be? Do you think they're going to be like, you know, what are you doing? You're not really here. You know, you're up here doing some business. I mean, how tough do you think they're going to be, Stephen? I mean, how tough do you think they're going to be on really enforcing the no work? I mean, no work, no study type thing. If you come up for a couple of days for a little 2-day study conference, is that fine?
Well, it depends what activity you're joining in, right? It's the same in Hong Kong. You know, you come as a visitor, and for all practical purposes under this scheme, you're going into China as a visitor. As a visitor, there is permitted activity and non-permitted activity. We have the same arrangements in Hong Kong. You can come to Hong Kong for a business visit, and that would, you know, entail you, for example, sitting around a conference room table, meeting with your business counterparts. The way the Immigration Department generally demarcate what's work and what's a business visit is whether you're actually going hands-on in the delivery of some kind of service, if you might be discharging a service outside of Hong Kong, and you come to Hong Kong and you do that as a visitor, the Immigration Department would deem that as work. That's just one example of how you delineate between work and being a mere business visit. And the same sort of arrangement would apply in China. For the most part, it's common sense, right? If it's a duck, so if it quacks and it walks like a duck, it's a duck, right? So going up to China to attend business visits, to do potentially some short-term informal course of study, attend a 1 or 2-day training program, generally speaking, that would be deemed visitor activity and would be permitted. But if you're going to go to work and you're going to be domiciling yourself in China, and it's clear that, you know, whilst you are a permanent resident of Hong Kong, you're spending more time in China in pursuit of your business and engaging in work type activities than you would be working in China. So it all depends on the nature of the activity and the attitude of the authorities to prosecute for breach of conditions of stay if they're finding that you're breaching your conditions of stay. But generally speaking, it's all a matter of common sense. You know whether you're working in China or whether you're visiting China.
Sure.
If you're working, then you can apply for the visa that you need.
Well, one of the reasons I'm asking is because, you know, I'm thinking like an entrepreneur, because I think government people, they come up with these new rules and they don't anticipate how the market will respond. Because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking this opens up hundreds of maybe thousands of job opportunities for ethnic minorities in Hong Kong that could be day trippers going, you know, doing courier, basically like some kind of a form of courier service back and forth across the border. It's pretty hard to beat SF Express right now for what they do. But I mean, you could see a lot of people at the lower income levels where their boss would be like, hey, I need this up in China now. I needed something delivered to Zhongshan. I need something delivered to Dongguan. And then I need you back here again tomorrow. I mean, the current conditions are 90 days, but what if you're in and out, you know, 200 days a year, but you're in and out on the same day? I mean, I'm guessing that hasn't been anticipated, but would that be contravening the work, no work requirement?
Well, I'm not an expert in Chinese immigration law in terms of what amounts to requiring permissions to work in China. Mm-hmm. But, you know, generally, the common sense test would apply. And in terms of the frequency of travel, there might be a sort of algorithm in the way that the clearance system works. That if you are demonstrating a certain pattern, that would require secondary examination to inquire as to what's bringing you to China so frequently, so that an immigration official can ask what you're up to determine whether or not you are in compliance with your permit or whether you're breaching your conditions of stay because of what you're doing. There may be that kind of control built into the system. But once again, it's all a question of common sense. I mean, it's just the same in Hong Kong. There's plenty of frequent visitors to Hong Kong that are coming and scouting around and looking for opportunities and engaging activities that might be borderline a breach of conditions of stay, but so long as they're not actively stepping over the line, and in due course, if it's clear that they have crossed the line and then moved into non-permitted activity, they then apply for the immigration status that they need. And our clients encounter that all the time. They get stopped at the border coming into Hong Kong because the pattern of their travel is revealing something to an immigration official that suggests secondary examination, so they can actually ask them what they're up to. And then, you know, issue them with a sort of a little sort of tap on the shoulder saying, it might well be that you need to start thinking about other immigration permissions because of, you know, the pattern that's revealed through the travel that you're making.
Toothpaste and milk powder couriers. I know what you're talking about. Rainbow?
I actually want to come back to Professor Hong, if I may, and I want to go back to your lobbying efforts back in 2019. It sounds as if that not all of what you were pushing for has been granted. So what are the further, you know, things that you were asking for that you think might be in the pipeline for the future?
Well, this is just one. I mean, I've always been pushing the, you know, make it easier for people to cross the border, not just the non-Chinese ethnic, but also the local Hong Kong people. Right now, you have to cross the border two times. You know, I've always been suggesting, why don't we just, you know, do one time. When you enter the territory, we check your ID and travel documents. When you leave, you just leave. Because when you leave, you just move to the other side of the border and go into the mainland, and the mainland can check your ID. So that will at least save, you know, at least half of the time crossing the border, you know, and the use of, like, voluntarily, people applying to use, like, facial recognition, those kind of things that you can travel, you know, like, for example, if you think about it, if you travel frequently in Hong Kong, in the airport, right now, once you check in, when you cross, you get into the restricted zone, and then when you cross, go through the immigration line, you don't need to take out your ID card anymore because they facial recognize you if you, you know, opt in for this frequent travel program. Mm. So we can also have a frequent travel program for people who come across the border to mainland often. And they say, okay, I opt in for a facial recognition. Then I don't need to, you know, queue. I can just go through a gate which has a facial recognition, and that's really, really convenient.
It's
things like that.
Yeah. It's like if you land at the airport in Vancouver, you can clear Canadian and American immigration if you're continuing on to the United States. They do it all in one step.
I just want to go back to this working thing. I just want to give you the background of, like, previously, before 2020, if you a Hong Kong, you know, Chinese Hong Kong permanent resident, you have this, travel permit. Theoretically, you cannot work in China as well. At that time, if you want to go and work, you need to go to the local public security authority to get a working permit. So what is the difference is if you're just going, but then we have hundreds of thousands of Hong Kong people who go there and work, but because their working relationship is actually in Hong Kong, where they are paying Hong Kong taxes and they're covered by Hong Kong, you know, labor insurance. So these people, even at that time, the mainland authority never bothered them. Say, oh, they're coming to work. But you think about it, people cross the border from Hong Kong to mainland before last year. Most of them are for work. There are only a handful of them are for, you know, pleasure and leisure. If you don't go to Xi'an you go to Shanghai and Beijing for leisure that often, but you go there for work. So it's only until I think January 2020 was the day the Shanghai authority, when I used to work for them, they have applied to release this application for working permit for Hong Kong residents. And then subsequently in April or May that year, the whole nation goes back. Okay, the ministry announced that, from now on, any Hong Kong Macau residents, they don't need to apply for a working permit to work in China. But those people who actually, before those days, when they apply for working permit, it's because you need to pay your salary in China. Mm. You need to pay your medical insurance in China.
Sure.
Then you have a formal working relationship. But we get 100,000 people who work for Hong Kong companies and go there on a weekly basis. We used to have my customers, we used to have these inspectors, quality inspectors for garment, for example. They travel we call them 2-5 boys. So every Tuesday, they go to England. They come back on a Friday. Okay? On a weekly basis.
The 2-5 boys. I like it. Yeah, so I mean, these types of things, process matters. And we've got an email here from one of our regulars, regular contributors on process. Ilner writes an email to us today, and he says, as one of those 270,000 non-Chinese permanent residents of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, I decided to apply to see how the process works. After the online application is verified, HKCTS, I think that's Hong Kong China Travel Service, will email the applicant to choose a specific service center and appointment time within 28 days, starting from Tuesday. As I hold an APEC business travel card, I think I will continue to use my ABTC, although using e-channels without filling in the immigration card, not to mention saving passport pages space from the multiple stamps, sounds like a relief to some. Overall, the application process seems straightforward, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes. Well, Elner, maybe after you go through the process, you can send us an update about your experience. What do we expect in terms of uptake for this? Stephen, you mentioned the APEC travel card. I think I've had my application in there waiting for like 9 months for the latest one, because quite often it gets held up by one country, right? The APEC business travel card. And I was there when the idea for this was floated in 1996 at the APEC Business Forum in Manila. I remember when this idea had its genesis. And quite often, you know, each of the, 18 countries? Is it 18 now? Has to approve?
Give or take, yeah.
And if one of them holds up the process, and from what I hear these days, it's Taiwan. You know, you need to go back and say, listen, just don't include Taiwan and the little stamps on the back. Because they're just holding up the whole process. I mean, what's the status of that right now? If this is going to be competing with the APEC Business Travel Card in popularity, I mean, is the APEC Business Travel Card still cutting the mustard?
Yeah, very much so. But it may have been a while since you applied for one, but there's they issue an interim card now. After about 8 weeks, once they've got the first batch of countries that have assented, they will then issue an interim card. And then once the process is completed for the rest of the jurisdictions, you can go back and then get an updated card with all of them included. It's Papua New Guinea that tends to hold things up, in my experience.
But really?
In terms of the
model of bureaucratic efficiency, Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, exactly. And not that many people go, right? So
true.
Firstly, you know, this is a dedicated China instrument. And when people ask me what are the benefits of permanent residency if they're deciding to make an application, particularly if it might be a kind of a tricky application because they're not quite sure whether or not they're going to qualify under the 7 years of continuity of ordinary residence requirements, I can now add this to the list and say, well, look, you know, you get this this permit to go home, so to speak, and there's great value in that because you don't have to worry about China visas and you don't have to qualify for an APEC business travel card, which, of course, you know, to get the business travel card, you need the support of your employer and you've got to show that you've got genuine business needs to be visiting the APEC economies. And that generally, you know, sometimes doesn't apply to everybody. But under this schema, as long as you're a permanent resident, then you can get one.
Right. So I guess we've got about 30 seconds left here, gentlemen. Quick one for each of you. Are you a regular weekend tripper up across the border, Stephen?
Haven't been to China in years.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Pretty clear. I did an overnight business trip to Shanghai since COVID.
Don't.
Whitman, how about you? Are you one
I
of these people?
I only go there on weekdays to work. I don't go there on weekends. Weekends I like to spend in Hong Kong and stay and rest.
Yeah, I'm probably in that same camp. I got another buddy of mine. He married a woman from mainland China. The kids and he and the wife and all have status, and so he goes in the slow line. I know he's going to be happy for this when his wife says it's time to cross the border. So very good. Well, we're going to keep an eye on this and see what the uptake is like and how popular it is with those 270,000 Hong Kongers, which include a lot of people that I know. So we'll be curious to see. I'll probably apply for it after I get back from my summer vacation, because it looks like you've got to be ready to go to that appointment after 28 days. And I don't know what happens if you're not in town, if you're going to miss it, if you can reschedule. Well, maybe we'll find out soon. Thank you very much for having on the show today, Professor Whitman Hung, who is the director of the Greater Bay Research Center of the China Silk Road I Valley Research Institute, and Stephen Barnes, the co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Center and author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook. We're back on Back Chat with Andrew Work and Rainbow Lung, and we're talking about this new visa access to, or visa free, I should say, access to China, whereby non-Chinese permanent residents can get a special card that will allow them to beep, beep, zip through the immigration lines for 5 years until they have to renew and get a next one. We are joined now on the show by Professor William Wong, who is a member of the Legislative Council in Hong Kong. Good morning, Professor Wong.
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. So, Professor Wong, you know, we've just had a little bit of a chat about what's going on with this. Did this require any intervention on behalf of the Legislative Council, or is this totally an on the China side of the border?
You mean we discussed that? Of course, we are aware of this.
Okay,
and, it's very supportive as well. I think I'm working in a university, and I do appreciate. I know the problem very quite well because we have colleagues actually having you know, they have permanent residents here, but they are non-Chinese, and therefore because you know our collaboration with mainland universities are more often than it used to be. So it required them to cross border very often. But it, but currently it's not that convenient because they have to use their passport. I mean, you know, with this arrangement, I think that helps a lot. I mean, I work in the INT industry, the innovation technology industry. I think that helps a lot indeed because they're promoting innovation technology is a goal of Hong Kong. So without the talents, without the people, it would go nowhere.
Mm. And so in terms of the people traveling back and forth, when you looked at it in LegCo, were there any concerns expressed or did you have recommendations to the central authorities about what safeguards they want to put on or any of the conditions of it? I mean, right now you have to renew it every 5 years. Why not every 10 years? Why not 15? I mean, did you have any advisory?
We didn't have actually,
suggestions?
You know, about the duration of the thing. I couldn't recall, you know, sort of an item discussing that. But we kind of aware that something like that would happen. We did actually, like, even myself personally, I raised this concern because you know I received I would say complaint. I received sort of problems from my colleagues and other colleagues from other universities raising that issue. And personally, myself actually wrote to the government, you know, pleading for some kind of special arrangement. And I'm glad to see that this happened.
Okay. Rainbow?
No, I'm just wondering whether there are any other negatives that were discussed.
I don't see anything. I mean, do you have any problems with it? Yourself?
No, we're gonna find out soon. I mean,
yeah,
so okay,
well,
so I mean,
well, actually, that's exactly what we have to do. I mean, if we always, you know, so think of or imagine there are problems, then and then you don't do anything, then we will be very sluggish. So what we are doing now, well, it may have problems. Let's go ahead and do it, and then we will fine tune it on the way.
Mm. I'm a big believer in the four freedoms. Right. Freedom of movement of people, freedom of movement of capital, goods and services. Right. I'm a hardcore free market guy. That's well known in Hong Kong. And this is about the free movement of people. And, you know, it typically creates opportunity for those that can see it. I had a suggestion before about, you know, things that could be done about, you know, that could generate it. But I mean, within LegCo, among your colleagues or through your studies, have you identified opportunities that this might create?
Well, that's what I said. I mean, before this actual discussion here, there was, a recording piece from the government. They identified the problem clearly. If we want to promote innovation and technology, we need the talents, and that requires flow of people, you know, across the border. I think they are doing the right thing. In fact, the crossing the border, we always talk about, you know, people, money, information. Experiment samples. These are the things that we discussed. In the past few years, we come across, you know, hurdles in transferring, you know, these sort of resources. So I think we're working on it, you know, step by step, including this one.
I'm still fixated on the fact that it helps people, you know, cross the border from Hong Kong to China, but only for permanent residents. It doesn't really encourage, in my view, people to come to Hong Kong. So are there any plans in the future? Are you in agreement with further expanding the scope to include in the future non-permanent residents?
I would imagine so in the future. But we need to have a start. We need to have a start. I mean, in fact, as you just mentioned, it is in our favor of Hong Kong. I mean, one of the things that we want to do is to retain, you know, international talents in Hong Kong. So what we know that the culture and the environment of Hong Kong is very international. At least it can be the stepping stone, as I right at the beginning. For international experts to come to Hong Kong, you know, they can live in Hong Kong and then they can freely flow into China to do their job.
Rainbow, I think your thinking is a little limited on this issue. I mean, of course, it's going to bring people to Hong Kong. Think of all those non-Chinese residents. Now they can go north and, you know, meet a girlfriend, meet a boyfriend, and then they're going to come visit Hong Kong. You know, think of all the romance that couldn't bloom because of complications of the border. When people can move, I mean, you know, romance blossoms.
Yeah, and in our case, for scientific purpose, I mean, people like us, I mean, two professors. One in Hong Kong being non-local, and the other one, non-Chinese, and the other one actually in there are some collaboration in the mainland. I mean, scientists is very sporadic. We have ideas and they want to exchange. I mean, and now you tell me that I have to follow a form and wait for about months before I can go in. That's a big hindrance.
It is for business, for romance, friendship.
And for
We have the Northern Metropolis, you know, kind of on our medium long-term horizon. Professor Wong, where could this have an impact? Is this, it'll help, duh. I mean, but aside from that, specifically, how could it help?
In the Northern Metropolis, NMD project, it's already the projection that about 2.5 million people will actually move over there in that area. And that is just very close to the border, you know, the southern part of the Shenzhen River. And I think that helps a lot. I mean, there will be a lot of people traveling across the border more regularly, you know, because a large population will move into NMD.
I saw something. Is that going to require more border crossings or expanding the current ones? Because I saw somebody was telling me a ridiculous number on the weekend that, like, what was it, 570,000 people crossed the border from Hong Kong going into China in one day over the long weekend.
Sure.
Now we've got another 270,000 people going, hey, I can go anytime I want, zip back and forth now. They're not all going to go at the same time, but
this is an optimization problem. Or what we call a queuing problem. If you know that there are more people to come, you just open more counters. I mean, happy problems, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's a very MBA term, queuing problems, optimization and queuing. I think I learned about that when I was doing my MBA.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well
for
done.
Sure.
You did a good job.
Operations management. No, don't congratulate me. My grades were not very good.
Good enough.
Yes, I mean, okay. So you think that there could be opportunities here? Is there any possibility of friction on the other side of the border? I mean, right now, Chinese economy is not doing very well. Part of the reason everything's so cheap in Shenzhen is because their economy is in the tank. And so they're happy to have – maybe they're happy now to have Hong Kongers coming over and spending money. But if the economy picks up, could that sentiment change? Could they be like, so many of these foreigners, and now they don't even look Chinese, you know? Oh, why are we letting all non-Chinese
people
spend
money?
In?
Why not? I mean, you know, spending money is – it doesn't care – where you come from, as long as you want to spend money. As you know, business is a very dynamic thing. We cannot just use our view at this current moment in time to look at in the future. But when things happen, when the thing is either favorable or non-favorable, there will be some adjustments.
Yeah.
I want to worry too much about it. You know, let it be. If you don't move, nothing will happen. You have to give it a kick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm all for shaking things up. I mean, that's the thing about being a freedom guy.
Exactly.
You like change. You like the future. I'm just wondering if people on the other side of the border. I mean, I guess Shenzhen is kind of an immigrant city. It is fundamentally an immigrant city.
This will be happy problems. I mean, if they sort of, you know, overflow a little bit, then you adjust your system to accommodate. I mean, I guess in the current moment in time, things will be all right.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens in maybe a year time or so.
Yeah, and of course, it's not just access to Shenzhen. I mean, we're talking about that because this is going to make it easier for people to cross the immediate border. But of course, it gives people access to all the rest of China.
True.
Is there any sense that there could be more Chinese tourism targeting specifically the non-Chinese resident, non-Chinese permanent residents in Hong Kong? Could there be more tourism targeting those people and lead to better service in English?
That's a good idea.
In other parts of China.
Probably you and me set up a kind of a travel agents over there and do that business. How's that?
Yeah. And then we get
You're right.
And then we get Stephen Barnes, the Hong Kong visa guy that we had on earlier. We might have a business. See, this is already the entrepreneurs of Hong Kong.
Yes, why not? Yeah.
Bringing into action as we do. Professor Wong, it's good that you're on the job. It's good that you're on the side of free movement of people. We like that, and we like having you on the show. So I want to say thank you very much for joining us today on Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. I'm sure we'll have to get you back again soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, cheerio.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.